Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Mahabharata, or the History of Greater India.
Today we will hear the story of the slaying of the Baka demon. In the city of Ekachakra, the Pandavas stayed in the guise of simple villagers, begging their food in the streets and bringing what they got to their mother, who would wait anxiously till their return. If they did not come back in time, she would be worried, fearing that some evil might have befallen them. Kunti would divide the food that they brought into two equal portions. One half would go to Bhima, the other half would be shared by the other brothers and their mother. Bhima, being born of the wind god, had great strength and a mighty appetite. Vrikodar, one of the names of Bhima, means wolf-bellied, and a wolf, you know, looks always famished, and however much it might eat, its hunger is never quite satisfied. Bhima's insatiable hunger and the scanty food he used to get at Ekachakra went ill together, and he daily grew thin, which caused much distress to his mother and brothers. Sometime later, Bhima became acquainted with a potter, for whom he dug and fetched clay. The potter, in return, presented him with a big earthen pot, which became an object of merriment to the street urchins. One day, when the other brothers had gone to beg for alms, Bhima stayed behind with his mother, and they heard loud lamentations from the house of their landlord. Some great calamity surely had befallen the poor family, and Kunti went inside to learn what it was. The landlord and his wife could hardly speak for weeping, and at last he said to his wife,
"Oh, unfortunate and foolish woman, though time and again I wished that we should leave this city for good, you wouldn't agree. You persisted in saying that you were born and bred here, and here you would stay where your parents and relations have lived and died. How can I think of losing you who have been to me at once my life's mate, loving mother, the wife who bore my children, nay, my all in all? I cannot send you to death while I stay alive. This little girl has been given to us by God as a trust to be handed over in time to a worthy man. It's not right to sacrifice her who is a gift of God to perpetuate the race. It's equally impossible to allow this, our other son, to be killed. How can we live after consigning to death our only solace in life and our hope for the hereafter? If he's lost, who would pour libations for us and our ancestors? Alas, you didn't listen to what I had to say, and this is the deadly fruit of your perversity. If I give up my life, this girl and boy will surely die soon for want of a protector. I don't know what to do. Maybe it's best that all of us die together."
And the Brahmin burst forth sobbing. The wife replied,
"I have been a good wife to you and done my duty by bearing you a daughter and a son. You are able, and I am not, to bring up and protect your children. Just as cast out offal is pounced upon and seized by rapacious birds, a poor widowed woman is an easy prey to wicked and dishonest people. Dogs fight for a cloth wet with food, and in pulling it hither and thither in unclean greed tear it to foul rags. In like manner, a woman without a guardian becomes a sport of wicked people who drag her hither and thither. It is impossible for me to protect two fatherless orphans, and they will perish miserably like fish in a waterless pond. It would be best if I am handed over to the great demon. Blessed indeed is a woman who passes into another world while her husband is still alive. This, as you know, is what the scriptures say. Bid me farewell. Take care of my children. I have been happy with you. I have performed many meritorious actions. By my faithful devotion to you, I am sure of heaven. Death now has no terror for one who has been a good wife. After I am gone, take another wife. gladden me with a brave smile, give me your blessings, and send me to the demon.
Hearing these words of his wife, the landlord tenderly embraced her, and utterly overcome by her love and courage, he wept like a child. When he could find his voice once again, he replied,
"Oh, beloved and noble one, what words are these? Can I bear to live without you? The first duty of a married man is to protect his wife. I would indeed be a pitiful sinner if I lived after giving you up to the man-eater, sacrificing both love and duty."
The daughter, who was hearing this piteous conversation, now interposed with sobs.
"Listen to me, child though I may be, and then do what is proper. It is me alone that you can spare to that great man-eating demon. By sacrificing one soul, that is, myself, you can have the others. Let me be the little boat to take across the ocean of the river of calamities. If both of you pass away, both I and this little baby brother of mine will soon perish unprotected in this hard world. If this family of ours can be saved from destruction by my single death, what a good death mine would be. Even if you considered my welfare alone, you should send me to the demon."
At these brave words of the poor child, the parents tenderly embraced her and wept. Seeing them all in tears, the boy, hardly more than a baby, started up with glowing eyes, lisping,
"Father, do not weep. Mother, don't cry. Sister, don't weep. I will kill the demon with his stick."
And he went to each and sat on their laps by turn. Then he rose up and took a stick of firewood and brandishing it about. The child's action and speech made them smile in the midst of their tears, but only added to their great sorrow. Feeling this was the moment for intervention, Kunti entered and inquired from them the cause of their sorrow and whether there was anything that she could do to help them. The landlord replied,
"Mother, this is a sorrow far beyond anything that you can do. There's a cave near the city where lives a cruel and terribly strong man-eater named Bakasura. He forcibly seized this city and kingdom 13 years ago. Since then, he has held us in his cruel thraldom. The Chaudhry ruler of this country has run away to the city of Ventrika and is unable to protect us. This man-eater formerly used to come out of his cave whenever he liked and, mad with hunger, indiscriminately kill and eat men, women, and children in this city. The citizens prayed to the man-eater to come to some sort of agreement in place of this promiscuous slaughter. They asked him, 'Don't kill us wantonly, it's your women's pleasure. Once a week we shall bring you sufficient meat, rice, curds, and intoxicating liquors, and many other delicacies. We will deliver these to you in a carriage drawn by two bullocks, driven by a human being, taken from each house in turn. You can make a meal of the rice, along with the bullocks and the man, but refrain from this mad orgy of slaughter.' Well, the Rakshasa, for better or worse, agreed to the proposal. From that day, this strong Rakshasa has been protecting this kingdom from foreign raids and wild beasts. This arrangement's been in force for many years." So far, we haven't found any hero who could free this country from this pest, for the man-eater has invariably defeated and killed all the brave men who tried. Mother, our legitimate king is unable to protect us. The citizens of a country whose king is weak shouldn't marry and beget children. A worthy family life with culture and domestic happiness is possible only under the rule of a good, strong king. Wife, wealth, and other things are not safe if there be no proper king ruling over us. And having long suffered with the sight of others' sorrow, our own turn has come now to send a person from our family as prey to the man-eater. I don't have the wealth to purchase a substitute. None of us can bear to live after sending one of us to a cruel death. And so I guess I'll just go with my whole family to him. Let the wicked glutton gorge himself with all of us. I'm sorry I've pained you with these things, but you asked, so I'm telling you. Only God can help us, but now we've lost even all hope of that.
So Kunti talked the matter over with her son Bhima, and returned to the landlord, saying,
"Good man, do not despair. God is great. I have 5 sons. One of them will take the food to the demon."
The Brahmin jumped up in amazed surprise, but then shook his head sadly and would not hear of the substituted sacrifice. But Kunti replied,
"Oh, Brahmin, do not be afraid. My son is endowed with superhuman powers derived from mantras, and will certainly kill this great demon, as I myself have seen him kill many other demons in the past. But keep this a secret, for if you reveal it, his power may come to naught."
Kunti's fear was that if the story got spoken abroad, Duryodhana's men would see the hand of the Pandavas and find out their whereabouts. Bhima was filled with unbounded joy and enthusiasm at the arrangement made by his mother. The other brothers returned to the house with alms. Yudhisthira saw the face of Bhima, radiant with joy, to which it had been long a stranger, and inferred that he was resolved on some hazardous adventure and questioned his mother, who told him everything. Yudhisthira commented,
"What is this? Is this not rash and thoughtless? Relying on Bhima's strength, we sleep without care or fear. Is it not through Bhima's strength and daring that we hope to regain the kingdom that's been seized by our deceitful enemies? Was it not through the prowess of Bhima that we escaped from the wax palace? And now you're risking the life of Bhima, who is our present protection and future hope? I fear you that our many trials have clouded your judgment."
Kunti Devi replied,
"Dear sons, we have lived happily for many years in the house of this Brahmin. Duty nay man's highest virtue is to repay the benefit he has enjoyed by doing good in his turn. I know the heroism of Bhima and have no fears. Remember who carried us from Varnavata and who killed the demon Hidimba. It is our duty to be of service to this poor Brahmin family."
Then the citizens came to the Brahmin's house with many kinds of meat, delicacies, jugs of curds, and intoxicating liquors, placed in a carriage drawn by 2 bullocks. Bhima got into the carriage and set out to the cave of the man-eating demon. The carriage went forth to the accompaniment of music. When they reached the accustomed place, the citizens turned back to safety, leaving Bhima alone to go on the carriage. The place in front of the Rakshasa's den was littered with bones, hair, and gore, and swarmed with vermin and ants. Bhima saw that it was littered over with torn off and mutilated hands, legs, and heads, and that foul carrion birds circled overhead sensing food. Bhima stopped the carriage and began voraciously to devour the food which had been meant for the Rakshasa, saying to himself,
"I've got to eat the food before it gets wasted in the confusion of my fight with the Rakshasa. Moreover, after I kill him, I will be polluted by contact with his corpse, and after that I won't be able to eat the food."
The Rakshasa, whose temper had already been chafed by long waiting, was maddened when he decried what Bhima was doing. Bhima also saw that the Rakshasa and challenged him to fight. The Rakshasa, with his enormous body, red hairs, and mouth stretching from ear to ear, ran forth toward Bhima, who merely smiled unconcerned. and evaded the clutching hands, continued to eat with his back to the demon. So the demon rained blows with his fist on the back turned so arrogantly to him, but Bhima neither noticed him nor stopped eating. The Rakshasa uprooted a tree and threw it at Bhima, who still did not even turn, but merely brushed aside the missile with his left hand and continued to eat with his right. It was only after he had finished, even to the last pot of curds, and rinsed his mouth, that he rose up with a sigh of satisfaction and faced the Rakshasa. A great fight ensued between them. Bhima toyed with this Rakshasa, throwing him down at will and bidding him rise and fight again. Thus the Rakshasa was many times tossed up by Bhima, as though he were a mere doll of rags. Finally, Bhima threw him down, placed his knee on his back, and broke his bones. The Rakshasa uttered a frightful howl of pain and despair, spewing blood, and finally died. Bhima dragged the carcass to the gates of the city. Returning to the Brahmin's house, he took a bath and then gave an account of the day's deeds, to the great delight of his mother. People of the city were amazed to find the body of this demon Rakshasa in the gateway. They did not know how it had happened. They knew whose turn it was to send food to the Rakshasa that day. They came to the Brahmin and asked him how it had happened. Already coached by Bhima, the Brahmin said,
"Seeing me crying, some gifted person from the heavens came and told me that he would carry the food to the monster and kill him too. I did what he asked me to do. He went away. I haven't seen him since."
The Pandavas continued to live in the house of the Brahmin, even after the killing of the Baka demon. One day, a Brahmin traveler came to the house to stay for the night. He had been to many countries, and they welcomed him. In the night, when their work was all done, they all crowded round him and asked him to tell about his wanderings and about the interesting things he had seen on the way. They had been alone all these days, and the coming of a stranger from another country was a great event for them. They wanted to know the world had received news of the terrible burning of the House of Lakh and the tragic death of the Pandavas. The Brahmin told them about his wanderings and then said,
"The real mission on which I have been traveling like this is to tell the world about the Shyamvara of a princess. It's been arranged by Draupada, the king of the Panchalas, in his city Kampilya. The princess is his daughter Draupadi. She was born from the sacred fire along with her brother Drishtadyumna."
The Pandavas expressed a desire to hear more details about this Swayamvara, and the Brahmin said,
"There is a very long and interesting story behind the birth of these two and about this Swayamvara too. If you are willing to listen, I'm willing to talk. There were two friends called Drona and Draupada who studied together in the ashram of Bharadwaj. When they were together, Draupada told Drona one day that he would share his kingdom with Drona when he became king of the Panchalas."
The Pandavas knew the story only too well, but for the sake of courtesy, and because they did not have the heart to dampen the enthusiasm of the garrulous Brahmin who seemed to enjoy telling a story, they did not let him know that they knew. He told them all about the Guru Dakshin paid by Arjun, the greatest of the disciples of Drona.
Draupada was amazed and charmed by the prowess of this young man. Indeed, so great was his admiration that he told himself, "There's no one in the world like Arjun. Also, Dropada's hatred for Drona was born in that moment.
The Brahmin paused for a breath. The Pandavas sat up. They did not know this part of the story. This hatred of Dropad for their Acharya Drona was news to them. They were now listening intently, and the Brahmin continued his story.
The hatred for Drona was born in the heart of Dropada at that moment, when Drona ceased to hate Dropada. It was a strange thing. Dropada could not look on Drona as his friend. He wanted to take revenge for his humiliation. It almost looks as though the hatred left the heart of Drona and leaped into that of Dropada to dwell there forever. Dropada's only aim was to get a son great enough to kill this man, Drona. Of course, no ordinary man could kill him, since Drona is a disciple of Bhargava and has in his possession all the divine weapons. So Dropada decided to perform a sacrifice for this purpose. He told himself, a son to kill Drona and a daughter as my gift for Arjuna. He wandered far into the forest. There were two rishis, Yaja and Upayaja, whom he approached with his request. After a year spent in pleasing Upayaja, he was told that Yaja would be able to help him. The two rishis performed for him the sacrifice called Putra Kam. At the end of the sacrifice, there arose a chariot out of the sacrificial fire, and seated in the chariot was a godlike youth. He was dressed in the manner in which a warrior dresses just before he sets out to battle. Well, Dropada was speechless with joy. He knew that the death of Drona was certain sooner or later. Then a wonderful thing happened. There arose out of the fire an extremely beautiful woman, the prospective gift of Dropada to Arjuna. She was dark, and her flashing eyes bewitched everyone. Her eyes were like the petals of a lotus, long and liquid. From her lustrous hair arose the perfume of the blue lotus. There was no one to equal her in beauty, charm, or splendor. Dropada thought that she was a worthy bride for Arjuna. When she appeared, there was a voice from the heavens which proclaimed, "This woman, who is the most beautiful of all women, will be the cause of the destruction of all Kshatriyas. She is born to fulfill a divine purpose." The children were named Drishtadyumna, and the girl was named Draupadi.
Bhima now spoke. He said that he had heard that Drishtadyumna was a student of Drona and had learned archery and the use of all arms from him. The Brahmin replied,
Yes, that's right. Drona, knowing that the prince was born to kill him, still taught him everything. He knew there's no use in fighting fate. You know, Drishtadyumna was a good friend of Bhima. That's one of the Pandavas who were burned in the house of Shalak. And that brings me to the reason for my wanderings. The Pandavas were the sons of Pandu. They were the nephews of King Dhritarashtra, who's now ruling in Hastinapur. And he's a son of the house of the Kurus. But what's the use for him to have been born in such a famous race? He doesn't act like it. He didn't act like a father to the fatherless sons of Pandu. You know what he did? He asked them to spend a few months in Varnavata, which is a beautiful city, but secretly at a house built of shellac, very inflammable material, and he made this house to be burned, and he killed the Pandavas in the fire. They're now dead, and their mother too. When Dhrupada heard about the death of the Pandavas at Varnavata, he was almost mad with grief, because it was predicted that Arjuna would marry his daughter, Draupadi. He knew that the evil-minded Dhritarashtra, his son Duryodhana and Sakuni, that's Duryodhana's uncle, had been the persons who were the cause of this tragedy. It looked as though Dhrupada was mourning the death of his own son, so great was his lament. But then something happened. His guru approached him and gave him the following advice. He told Dhrupada, "Don't grieve so much. I have a feeling that the Pandavas are not dead. The words of the sages can't go wrong. After all, Yaja and Upayaja performed the sacrifice for you. Dhrupadi is supposed to become the wife of Arjuna. How can Arjuna then be dead? So what I'm saying is that the words of the sages and their predictions can't be wrong. The Pandavas, they've been righteous people, and I really don't believe that they died in that fire. Here's a plan to flush them out. You must have it proclaimed all over this India that there will be a Shrayamvara, a competition for the hand of Draupadi. Hold it in your capital city, Kampilya, in Panchala. Stipulate a condition for winning the hand of your daughter. A test in archery, let's say, that only Arjun can accomplish. He'll never be able to resist the challenge. I'm sure the Pandavas are somewhere disguised. Arjun will surely attend the Sayambar and win the hand of Draupadi. Draupadi took the advice of his guru. He sent out the proclamation to the four directions. He's asked a large number of us Brahmins to go from place to place, spreading the news that a great Swayamvara is to be held in Kampila. Who knows, somewhere in my travels, I may even end up telling Arjun in disguise about this event.
And with a loud laugh, appreciating his own joke, the Brahmin said that right now he was too tired to keep awake anymore, and went to sleep. The princes sat silent for a long time after the Brahmin had retired. None of them spoke a word. Kunti looked at them and realized that they all wished to go to Panchala, but were unable to say so. She thought that she would make it easier for them. So she said,
"We have been living too long in the house of this Brahmin. I have become slightly disgusted with looking at the same things every day. Why should we not think of moving? After hearing the words of this Brahmin, my thoughts are turned towards this city of Kampilya in Panchala. They say that Panchala is the land of plenty. We heard too about the Swayamvara of the princess. It is sure to be a grand event. There will be a great crowd, and it will be amusing to walk about the streets of the city in the midst of all the celebration. There will be a lot of excitement in store for us. I feel a desire to go to Panchala, if you are willing."
The Pandavas were only too willing. They were happy at the thought of the adventures ahead of them.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.